genocide in relation to the Palestinians in Gaza, take all measures within its power to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of Article 2 of the Convention, in particular, A, killing members of the group.
The Economist's poll found that Americans under 30 see Israel as genocidal by a 2-to-1 margin, 49% to 24%.
I think especially in the age of social media, with like a lot of young people on social media and like getting their news directly from Gaza, they see so clearly what's going on. They see the truth and there's no denying it. And I think the movements, especially on social media, have been so empowering and have made information so accessible that it's just when you actually see what's going on, I mean, there's really no other explanation or no other outcome than to, you know, be pro-Palestine or against the occupation or against the genocide.
However, the increased awareness of Israel's genocidal atrocities isn't something which is being reflected in Washington. Congress recently shot down a resolution which would have made American military aid to Israel conditional on human rights, indicating just how much criminal latitude Washington is giving to Tel Aviv. Youth-driven anger over the war crimes in Palestine is threatening to make Joe Biden a one-term president this November and perhaps split the Democratic Party. The poll showed that Democrats agree Israel is committing genocide by a whopping 49 to 21% margin.
Going back to 2020, when it wasn't an issue, you had the unified, you know, Democratic Party, and you know that you could have had a stance whether you want to be pro-Palestine or pro-Israel, because there wasn't a conflict going on. I think the conflict is causing a lot of people on the Democrat side to pick a side.
The poll found that 18% of Republicans say that Israel is committing genocide, which is a 40% increase from a poll last October 11th, which found that just 13% of Republicans agreed that Israel's military response was too much. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Yemenis from different walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other major cities. They commended the Yemeni army for its operations against vessels linked to the United States, the United Kingdom and Israel in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. They also reiterated their steadfast support for the Palestinian people.
The whole world is watching the Israeli genocidal war against the Palestinian people and its result and repercussions. Yemenis are also following what's happening with all their feelings. If what happened to the Palestinian people had happened to other people in the world, the situation would have been the same. The Palestinian people have been suffering for 75 years from continuous occupation, displacement, killing, and indiscriminate attacks, and they need us to stand with them, as we have one language, one religion, and as we are both suffering from oppression.
Protesters condemned the aggression of the US and UK against their country, while also expressing readiness to stand against the entire world in support of their Palestinian brothers.
The goal of the American-British aggression was to stop the Yemeni army's naval attacks, but they completely failed in achieving this goal. The strikes continue and nothing has happened except that they have involved themselves in the ongoing conflict and are seeking to bring in other countries as well. They are now being targeted by the Yemeni army. The Yemeni armed forces are seeking to expand their operations and will not stop until the genocide committed by Israel in Gaza comes to an end.
Earlier, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, declared that the Yemeni army's naval operations would go on until the entry of food and medicine into Gaza is permitted. He emphasized that any escalation by the US and UK would yield contrary outcomes and would not diminish Yemen's resolve.
People in Yemen say they fully support all decisions made by the political and military leadership in confronting the Western powers. They have said that they have authorized the Yemeni army to escalate its naval operations until Israel ceases its genocidal war in Gaza. Abu Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
It was a ruling weeks in the making. Lawyers acting for South Africa had requested the International Court of Justice implement special measures that would prevent more deaths and a further humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. This whilst the main case of genocide is considered against Tel Aviv, a process which could take years.
In the court's view, the aforementioned facts and circumstances are sufficient to conclude that at least some of the rights claimed by South Africa and for which it is seeking protection are plausible. This is the case with respect to the right of Palestinians in Gaza to be protected from acts of genocide and related prohibited acts identified in Article 3, and the right of South Africa to seek Israel's compliance with the latter's obligations under the convention.
Free Palestine!
Outside the court, pro-Palestinian activists had a mixed response.
It is a bittersweet feeling that I'm having now. It's as if finally there is international recognition that the Palestinian people are facing the threat of genocide, that they are facing vicious war crimes. And it's as if we have to be grateful that they're finally recognizing it, right? And to hear also the evidence that the judge stated, it was very painful to hear all this evidence there. But still, the people on the ground right now, I don't think it will benefit them at all on the short term. So it's also very painful to realize that.
The whole world knows it. They are exposed. That means that the people, the normal people who are not affected by the politics, will know the truth, will know that there is a genocide there. Israel cannot hide it anymore. They are exposed. And now the most important thing is that every complicit party has to know that they will be the next. Israel may escape with it, but the other complicit parties will not.
That gave me hope, and that reminded me that this is a long struggle, and even though a ceasefire has not been ordered, which is a bitter pill for us to swallow, but this is still a victory. This is the first time that Israel has been officially quite clearly reprimanded, and as Moin Rabbani, the Palestinian analyst, said, this is a stain on them forever.
Of Foreign Affairs on 6 December 2023.
The muted response to the ICJ's interim ruling shows that it wasn't just occupation Israel that was in the dock in the building behind me, but actually it was institutions like the ICJ, like the UN's top court, because people want to know that they can have justice that is tied to what's going on and not simply to Western political interests. The European Union has said it respects the decision of the court and expects all parties to comply. Meanwhile, Israeli ministers have taken to social media to call out both the ICJ for attempting to lecture Tel Aviv and again calling the South African case anti-Semitic. South Africa, who brought the action against Israel to the ICJ, acknowledged the six measures granted would be difficult to implement without a ceasefire.
This case was very much about international bodies ensuring that they exercise their responsibility to protect us all as global citizens.
From the river to the sea!
Israel has 1 month to make its initial report to the ICJ to show compliance of the special measures requested. Palestinians have indicated they will not hold their breaths. Amina Taylor, The Hague.
The Yemeni army continues its retaliatory attacks against the US and UK. Yemen's armed forces reported launching ballistic missiles at American warships that were protecting two commercial vessels in the Gulf of Aden and the Bab al-Mandeb Strait. Yahya Saria, the spokesman for Yemen's armed forces, stated that an American warship was hit by ballistic missiles, forcing the two American commercial vessels to withdraw and return.
We engaged in a clash with a number of American destroyers and warships in the Gulf of Aden and Bab al-Mandeb while they were protecting two American commercial ships. The result of the clash was as follows. A direct hit on an American vessel, which forced the two American commercial vessels to return. Several of our ballistic missiles struck their targets despite warships' attempts to intercept them.
Observers argue that the Yemeni attack is legally justified as an act of self-defense, pointing to the US and UK aggression against Yemen and multiple rounds of airstrikes on Yemeni territories.
The operations of the Yemeni army are legitimate and come in self-defense and on behalf of the Palestinian people, who are subjected to the worst types of genocide and crimes against humanity. These operations took place amid the silence of the international community. Palestinians and Yemenis are brothers, and we should not forget the aggression being launched by the U.S. and Britain against our country. And therefore, the Yemeni army has the right to respond to any such attacks.
Since January 11th, the U.S. and the U.K. have initiated numerous airstrikes targeting several positions in different Yemeni cities in response to Yemeni naval operations in the Red Sea against Israeli-linked vessels. In response, the Yemeni army has intensified its naval operations, now including American and British ships on its list of targets.
For the first time in 75 years, U.S. warships are experiencing attacks. Observers say the American insistence on militarizing the Red Sea to protect Israeli-linked vessels will lead to the regional escalation for which the U.S. will be responsible. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Gaza, where Israel's air and artillery strikes have become a regular occurrence. In the besieged strip, sounds of bombardment are followed by screams of mothers losing their kids, as well as cries of children whose parents are killed by the regime. Tens of thousands of Palestinians, most of them women and kids, have been killed in the relentless strikes since October 7th. Humanitarian organizations report that more than 10 children on average lose one or both of their legs per day in the coastal territory. And that's just one aspect of the unending cycle of Israel's brutality against the people of Gaza. Apart from casualties, the regime's recurring attacks have caused indescribable devastation in the Palestinian territory. But when it comes to describing the true nature of the Israeli onslaught, there's no word better than genocide. There are multiple reports and countless evidence indicating that what's taking place in Gaza meets the definition of a genocidal war. Since the very beginning of the onslaught, millions of people around the world, along with a number of states, have been calling on international institutions to oblige Israel to end the genocide. South Africa is one of those states. The country, in late December, filed a lawsuit against Israel at the International Court of Justice. Now, nearly 1 month after the lawsuit was filed, the Hague-based court is set to convene on Friday to decide on South Africa's request for an interim ruling in its genocide case against Israel. The possible verdict by the ICJ would order Israel to announce a ceasefire in Gaza and allow more humanitarian aid into the Palestinian territory. In its filing, Pretoria referred to Israel's violation of the United Nations 1948 Genocide Convention. South Africa's application includes multiple offenses, from indiscriminate killing of Palestinians to the wholesale destruction of Gaza's infrastructure. Earlier in January, the Hague-based court convened two-day hearings. At the closing of the first day, the South African ambassador to the Netherlands asked the court to order Israel to immediately suspend its onslaught on the besieged strip.
One, the state of Israel shall immediately suspend its military operations in and against Gaza. Two, the state of Israel shall ensure that any military or irregular armed units which may be directed, supported, or influenced by it, as well as any organizations and persons which may be subject to its control, direction, or influence, take no steps in furtherance of the military operations referred to in point one above.
South Africa's move has been welcomed by Palestinian resistance movements. Hamas said the arguments and evidence put forth by South Africa proves Israel's crimes of genocide and ethnic cleansing in Gaza. The Palestinian foreign ministry also applauded the move, calling it a historic moment for humanity.
This is a historical moment for the Palestinian people and for humanity, as well as for the world order based on law.
A number of countries and international organizations have welcomed South Africa's case at the ICJ. The Organization of Islamic Countries, OIC, and the Arab League expressed their support for the case. Malaysia, Turkey, Jordan, and Iran are among the states voicing support for the motion. Israel's crimes against Palestinians in in Gaza have also been referred to the International Criminal Court. Mexico and Chile have requested the ICC to probe the crimes against civilians in Gaza. Submitting lawsuits at international courts are parts of global efforts to mandate Israel to put an end to its non-stop strikes on Gaza, as their scale and nature dovetail with the widely accepted narrative that the onslaught is actually a genocidal war.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to Thee, to be joyful in worshipping Thee, to be desirous of Thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me Thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom Thou wilt.
Thank you.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, there seem to be two very important axes involved in what is happening to Palestinians in Gaza. Either one supports the Palestinians or they do not. The two fronts are the axes of resistance, which consists of resist U.S. hegemony via the Zionist regime, and the other front is the axis of genocide. Now, the axis of resistance is made up of Iran and its allies, and the axis of genocide is made up of the United States and its allies. One side fights the genocide against the Palestinians, and the other side supports the genocide against Palestinians. Now, this may sound like a very simplistic explanation, but it is a reality. Stay with me as we take a look at this on this spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Saib Shaf, author and West Asia expert out of Belfast. And Eve Zingler, author and political activist out of Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, thank you both for being with us. Well, Saab, let's start off with the Palestinian resistance itself. We've seen today that more rockets are still being fired at Tel Aviv from al-Qassam brigades in Gaza. Let's talk about this. How is it possible, after Zionist forces have been on the ground in Gaza for months, that they can't even stop the resistance from firing into occupied areas?
The Palestinian resistance, despite the ongoing Zionist, Western-backed genocide on the civilians in Gaza, they exposed how hollow and weak this entity, which is the whole, as we witnessed in the 8th of October, all the West rushed down to the Zionist entity, from Biden to the Italian, the French, the British, and Romanians, the rest of Europe, to shore up this collapsing base, advanced military base for the empire, and the shoring up the Zionist entity with opening all the arsenals of the United States of America and West Europe, even diverting some shipments of weaponry and money as well from Ukraine to it. This in its own was a huge shake and a huge insult to all the investment the West Europe and the United States of America is being investing in creating this Zionist entity on the expense of killing, I don't want to even say hundreds of thousands, millions of Arabs in that region. But yesterday, if we would have seen from today, resistance in Gaza launched from the heart of Khan Yunis a barrage of rockets targeting Tel Aviv. Yesterday, the resistance published videos showing they are manufacturing their own weapons underground in Khan Yunis itself. The key for the resistance, and I can't say this is across all the resistance axes from Lebanon to Palestine to Iraq to even Syria to Yemen. They are all share this point, which they manufacture their own high-tech but cheap weapons, which they can afford to produce and to target. And this in its own is creating a kind of tilting the balance of power regionally. And this is what is shaking the United States of America. Let me allude just a quick point. The Yemenis in their own, when they enacted their blockade, this is the first time in history a small poor state without a navy, without that powerful navy behind her, to impose and enact a blockade against a power which is considered the 14th strongest army in the world.
Okay,
the
stay with me, Saab, because I'm going to get into Yemen and other parts of the resistance as the show progresses. But let's get Eves involved in this conversation. Now, since the genocide has started by the Zionists against Palestinians, the Lebanese resistance group Hezbollah has been increasing its number of reciprocal attacks against the Israeli regimes. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the role that Hezbollah has been playing in opening up a new front for the Israeli regime to put pressure on them, whether it has been effective or not, in your perspective.
Well, I mean, obviously it's been effective in the sense that if they wouldn't have, that would have made the Israeli military even more capacity to kill in Gaza. They have been able to obviously bomb inside Israel multiple occasions, and the Israelis are clearly, you know, huge numbers of Israelis have had to move from the area, and the Israelis are clearly trying to get Hezbollah to move away from the border. It's, I think, quite clearly a security problem for Israel. You know, how big of an impact it's having on Israel's ability to kill in Gaza, you know, it's not clear to me. I mean, obviously Israel has its nuclear weapons and they could drop them on Gaza if they wanted, and they can obviously lob huge numbers of U.S. Bombs into Gaza, which they've been doing. The question of Israeli soldiers, I think, is a bigger problem, because the cost of taking people out of the economy and having reserves called up and you know, the more number of troops they have to have devoted towards Hezbollah, it takes away from what they can have directed at the Palestinians in Gaza. So it's clearly had an impact. I'm not in a position to assess like how substantive that has been on Israeli military capacities.
Okay. What about that, Saab? Your perspective on the effect that Hezbollah has had, if any, and your thoughts on the type of weapons that Hezbollah has gradually started introducing, different kinds of weapons as the conflict progresses.
One of the things which is I noticed, and I was proud of, how the Hezbollah modified the anti-tank kind of missiles, like the Cornet missile, to be used against kind of not tanks and not armed personnel, but against bases, military bases and things, which is, this is how they develop that and make it advanced. This is amazing. And then the second thing, which we saw a couple of days ago, the TV-guided missiles precisely go into its own target and can adjust its targets by the launcher as well. This is an advance and a huge message to the Zionist entity to understand the Hezbollah is producing types of technologies which they didn't know about, and with their precise missiles, even the Zionist entity yesterday, they were saying Hezbollah is capable of launching 1,000 missiles an hour at them if they if it's gone. Some of the Zionist entity journalists. This is like a nightmare scenario for the Zionist entity. So the technologies, which is indigenous technologies, this is an important point in here. It is indigenous technologies among the resistance axes. And so they can dig underground deep and they produce these things and can fight our long battles. They don't want to wait for shipment routes and stuff. They have the technology and they have the know-how and producing it.
Okay, well, Eves, a drone attack on Sunday hit American soldiers, killing three of them and wounding at least 25 of them. This was, reports say, on the border between Jordan and Syria. Others say it was at an American base in Syria. But in general, how significant are such attacks in putting pressure on the Americans for supporting the Israeli genocide in Gaza?
I think they're significant. There is no doubt that the U.S. is feeling pressure, and there's been reports are saying something in the range of 150 to 200 attacks within Iraq against U.S. military targets. Clearly, it's a big media item in the U.S. It's causing, I think, some reverberations within U.S. Politics in terms of anti-war voices saying, let's not get sucked into a bigger war on behalf of the U.S. or on behalf of the Israeli genocide. So you know, you would like to believe that there's democratic mechanisms within U.S. politics, or the U.S. would listen to, you know, rulings of the International Court of Justice or things like that. But the reality is that military resistance is what the masters in Washington are you know, respond to. And so I think that this is definitely putting some pressure on the U.S. Now, you know, does the U.S. empire respond by escalating things? I think that's certainly a possible and maybe probable situation response. But clearly, you know, just sort of standing aside and saying, hey, go ahead and kill as many people as you want in Gaza with U.S. provided and donated weapons. That's clearly not a strategy.
Well, Saab, Islamic Resistance of Iraq has launched over 150 attacks on American interests in Iraq and Syria. Your thoughts about the effectiveness of what they're doing?
Not just in Iraq and in Syria. The Iraqi resistance were amazing. Even directed massive, they got a massive impact on the two major ports, Haifa ports and Isdod ports in the Zionist entity. They used on it kind of cruise missiles. And in Haifa alone, they said this is a strategic area which is hit, and the Zionist entity did its best to hide that. The Iraqi resistance acting with armed with a kind of legislation from the Iraqi parliament, which is considered the American presence in Iraq is occupation, and they ask the Americans to leave. As long as the Americans there, they are occupation forces. So they're directing a blow at an occupation forces. And as well, the American presence in Syria is an occupation, which the Syrian government, even lately, the Americans looting that, they're going to try to come to an agreement between the Syrian government and Qassad, which is a Kurdish movement supported by the United States of America. The Syrian government dismissed that. They said they're not going to entertain any ideas or lies from the American occupation. And the Iraqi, when they directed the blows at them in Syria, because they know this is oil of Syria, which is looted from the northeast of Syria, and the Kurdish militant try with Takfiri groups selling it. It comes through Kirkuk in Iraq and goes to the Zionist entity as well. This is stole oil. And the same thing, the Americans are looting nearly $1 billion a year from the Iraqi oil. And they have just a kind of killing point on the American, the finance system in Iraq. They're stagnating the Iraqi economy by controlling its liquidity of dollars or that in the American banks. And this is the point which they're trying to use to pressurize the Iraqi government. But lately, the direct the blows, the Iraqi resistance directed at them, it's make them on the run. They want to leave Iraq. They're losing a lot lately in the personnels on shifting their forces from base to a base. So the Americans paying a heavy price in Iraq and in Syria right now.
Well, looking at what Saab has just talked about, Aves, is, of course, the Iraqi resistance in dealing with ports in the Mediterranean. And we also have ports basically in the Red Sea, regime ports on the Red Sea that have been being attacked by the Yemeni forces. Let's talk about the Yemeni side of things and how effective their blockade in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandeb has been.
Well, it's put a lot of pressure on the U.S. It's obviously generated significant concern among business circles around North America, Europe. It's cost, the shipping costs have gone up. You know, it hasn't stopped Israel from doing what it's doing. You know, when all the Arab countries that have normalized with Israel have done basically nothing, what the Houthis have done is a significant act of solidarity. It's put pressure, but it obviously hasn't succeeded in what the aim is, which is to just stop this horror that Israel's committing.
Well, Saab, the Yemeni armed forces launched a missile on Sunday targeting an American Navy ship. Your thoughts on Yemen's targeting this ship and other foreign ships and also trying to put pressure on the regime to stop the genocide and the effectiveness in general of the Yemenis? And they continue to say no matter what happens to them, they will support their brothers in Gaza.
What the Yemeni military forces doing is something new, even new as we never heard of a poor country have the ability to do a de facto Navy blockade, as I said, against some of the strongest militaries in the world, from the Zionist entity to the United States of America, to the British, to all the Anglo-Saxon gang the Americans brought to them. And to their dismay, those people, the United States of America, fought against Yemen for 8 years using the proxies, Saudis and the Emiratis, and were defeated. And they're the one who asked for a ceasefire with Yemen after they seen the impact these Yemenis done on the industries in Saudi Arabia or on the Gulf region. So the United States of America didn't learn the lesson. Today, the Yemenis using high tech, as I said, but cheaply produced in Yemen, technologies, military technologies, they are targeting the American Navy ships, they're targeting the Zionist ships, they're targeting the British, and the last one was a British ship carrying crude oil to the Zionist entity and all of that. So Yemen is showing its muscles in the area. And the United States of America, which is supposed to be the superpower of the world, cannot face Yemen practically. They target Yemen. Yemen is losing some civilians and losing some infrastructure, of course. But this is a power-tilting exercise the Yemeni showed. And the Yemeni showed they have a formidable fighting will and locally produced technology which can target them. This is going to have a huge impact. Since a couple of days ago, the Qatari, they declared they are not going to send their gas, liquid form of natural gas, through the Red Sea. That means Europe won't have that liquid gas, which is they don't have it as well, Europe, or from the Russians. So they have to wait till get the Americans supply more from their natural gas to Europe. That will increase the prices. That will add to the inflation. As well, the route, which is the ships taken now around Africa going to Europe, is adding 2 weeks more or even sometimes 3 weeks to the journey of the ships and adding a huge cost of increased double or triple in the insurance services. So this is the European find themselves again like they fell for the Ukraine war, and that infected their own economies in Europe. And this as well, gamble, which they followed the United States and America in it, showed they're going to pay a heavy price for it. This genocidal camp doesn't care, it seems, and they don't care their own population will suffer or not. This is what the people in Europe are aware of. I heard the chants in the streets of Ireland and the UK, and of course going to be in the United States of America. The demonstration was shouting for Yemen to turn another ship around. People are lifting the flags of Yemen all over the streets of Europe because Yemen showed it is a country who stand by humanity, a country stand against genocide, against these hypocrite criminal genocidal powers in Europe or the USA.
Well, Yves, in the meantime, we have U.S.-led Axis increasing its support for the genocide. They've sent more weapons, even troops, to support the Zionist regime. And in the meantime, the U.S.-led front has not demanded a ceasefire and standing in front of it and not allowing it, and has allowed Palestinian blood to continue to be spilled. Your thoughts on this? I mean, does the United States and its front, in your perspective, have any kind of political credibility or any type of credibility left, or your assessment of this?
Well, they're clearly, they are participating in genocide, and the egregious response to the International Court of Justice calling for Israel to basically curtail its genocidal policies, the reaction of my government here in Canada, they didn't even restate the, you know, perfunctory statement that that's legal. Israel legally bound by the ruling. They've responded by suspending aid to Palestinian refugees. They responded by deepening the starvation that Palestinians are facing in Gaza. I mean, this is just absolutely outrageous, cynical, mean-spirited. I mean, and so they're dripping. Their hands are dripping in blood. I mean, there's no other way to consider this.
All right. Well, Saab, the U.S. is pointing the finger at Iran for all the attacks by the resistance in the region. Iran says resistant groups make their own decisions. Some American officials are calling for an all-out attack against Iran. Your thoughts?
You see, the war in Gaza itself showed globally the impact of this American-backed, Western-backed genocidal war in Gaza. And we witness today the world order start to shift from unilateral to multilateral. And what I mean by unilateral, to not even like before the Soviet Union analysis of America, no. Today you're going to see China, Russia, Iran, United States of America, maybe another power as well. So Iran in its own as a power in the region, it's not even becoming a regional power now. It's a global player, Iran. And the United States of America, if it's going to try to resort to blame Iran for the failures and for its involvement in supporting genocide, its own people criticize the United States of America before the Iranian people, before the people even in the Middle East. People seeing this criminal ruling elite in the United States of America, what's doing. And whatever they try to target to involve, they cannot wage a war in Iran since they are a lot weaker than even to be able to handle the Yemenis, let alone the Iranian. and it's not able to handle the Iraqi resistance or even the part of the Iraqi resistance and the Syrian resistance. So what the United States of America is doing, they are a lot weaker than before. So what we're witnessing today is a global change, and that's triggered from Gaza. People saying what the people in Palestine suffering from, and it's become very clear what sides you're standing on. You want to side with the criminal genocidal forces like the United States of America, or with the decent people who are defending humanity, like the Iranian, the Yemenis, the Syrians, the Iraqis, that kind of people. And we can see in the globe, from South Africa to Ireland, there is a lot of forces who's gathered together to support the Palestinians. Let the ruling elite aside. Those people are controlled by multinationals who always make the money out of the suffering of the people of the world.
Okay. This is understandable. On that note, so sorry to interrupt you. On that note, we're out of time. Appreciate both of you being with us. Saib Shath, author and West Asia expert out of Belfast. Yves Engler, author and political activist out of Montreal. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
In Britain, local authorities and charities are urging the government to extend its Household Support Fund scheme, which was first introduced in autumn of 2021 and distributed among local councils to help those in need during the cost of living crisis. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of iNews has covered this story and tells us more. UK councils warned free school meals during holidays will likely be withdrawn for hundreds of thousands of school pupils after Easter due to the end of government funding. Local authorities and charities are urging the government to extend its Household Support Fund scheme, which was first introduced in autumn of 2021 and distributed among local councils to help those in need during the cost of living crisis. Originally set to last until spring of 2022, the scheme had been extended three times, taking the total amount of funding to £2.5 billion, while England was given a further £842 million in April of 2023 in order to support those in need. However, the fund was not mentioned in the autumn statement by the Chancellor and is now due to come to an end on 31st of March. The scheme has been used by local councils to fund free school meal vouchers during the holidays, which has become a lifeline for low-income families during and since the pandemic, and takes up much of the money local authorities receive through the scheme. Beverly Craig, leader of Manchester City Council, said, "It is heartbreaking to think that her local authority will no longer be able to fund free school meal vouchers and other cost of living support when the fund comes to an end." She said, "We're a city that has historic levels of poverty and deprivation, often overlooked. Over 43% of our kids are growing up in poverty. Council analysis has shown that 20% of Manchester residents have a disposable income of less than £30 a month after rent, food and bills." Beverly Craig said, "Last year alone, the city spent over £50 million alleviating poverty and dealing with the cost of living crisis, adding that the council has been assisted this year by a Household Support Fund grant of £12.9 million. Councillor Craig said that this has enabled the council to help 60,000 people, including 40,000 children, receiving free school meal vouchers outside of term time, 12,500 vulnerable households getting cost of living support payments, 6,000 children benefiting from a holiday activity fund, and 400 care leavers accessing a boost to their income. Beverly Craig said, "So for a city like us, losing out on the Household Support Fund, it really is a problem. The 60,000 people that we're able to support in addition to all of the work that we're doing around poverty stops overnight." She added, "We're seeing vulnerable families who had a little bit of money tucked away for a rainy day have spent the rainy day money." Manchester City Council is calling for a year-long extension to the Household Support Fund, considering that economic forecasts suggest that the situation may have improved slightly by this time next year. But obviously, there's a longer-term discussion that this should be mainstreamed into budgets. Bella Sankey, the leader of Brighton and Hove City Council, which together with councils in Plymouth, Lambeth, Bristol and Southampton, has written to the government to stress the importance of the Household Support Fund, said that she has been horrified by what she has seen and heard in local food banks. She said, "Demand is now out of control, completely outstripping supply, like nothing that has ever been experienced before. The amount of discretionary food vouchers we would previously give out over the course of a year during COVID now goes out the door in just 1 month." She added, "The concern is that people are clearly going without food," adding that the situation could potentially be having an impact on school attendance, as she has heard from one parent who was terrified about their child going to secondary school and needing to find the money to pay their bus fare. She said, "Those are the sorts of calculations and decisions people are having to make." Graham Witham, the Chief Executive Officer of Greater Manchester Poverty Action, said that the Household Support Fund has been really important, adding that the Free School Meals Council have been able to provide during holidays has helped build a safety net for families. Graham Witham said, "The other side of it is that councils themselves are cash-strapped and don't have a significant ring-fence funding for welfare provision. So this has just been massive. It's enabled councils to stand up to responses to need that they wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. And it's created some space for innovation as well." He said he believes that historically government has washed its hand of local welfare provision, but that the Household Support Fund helped it to understand the value of the role that local authorities have. Graham Witham, the CEO of Greater Manchester Poverty Action, sees the end of the funding as a big cliff edge because cost of living support payment from the government ends in March as well. He called for permanent ring-fence funding for local welfare provision by local councils. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Lynn Perry, the chief executive of the British charity Barnardo's, said, "Across the United Kingdom, families are struggling to pay their bills or feed their children, often borrowing money and taking on debt just to get through another week. It's vital that the Household Support Fund continues." Lynn Perry added, "The fund ends in March of 2024, so time is running out. Without renewal, it will leave a major hole in local crisis support." Leeds City Council Executive Member for Communities, Mary Harland, said the situation is looking pretty grim without the Household Support Fund, adding that, "Despite being an economically vibrant city, we do still have something like 22% of our population living in poverty, including 35,000 individuals or one in five children. She said the Household Support Fund has helped Leeds City boost what it offers through its welfare support scheme, which provides food and fuel vouchers, white goods and help with building maintenance, adding that it is a vital scheme. Gespil, an organisation which works with vulnerable young people across the city, told the local council that it had been able to top up the gas meter of a family living in one of the most deprived areas of the city of Leeds, who had not had heating for several weeks and whose children had been off school with colds and other illnesses. A report published recently by the Joseph Rowntree Foundation found that informal carers are 8% more likely to be living in poverty than those with no caring responsibilities, at 28% compared to 20%. Dominic Carter, Director of Policy and Public Affairs at Carter's Trust, said, "We need to think about what the Household Support Fund being taken away might mean for people like that. What else will they have to go without? We know that for a large number of unpaid carers, they put family members first, often to the detriment of their own health and their own well-being." It comes as council leaders have also called for reform of local government finance and an end to short-term measures after Community Secretary Michael Gove confirmed authorities will receive £500 million in emergency funding for social care.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.